thank you so much for joining me today. Today I have someone who's going to be talking about his life story and how he made a change from bad to good. And his name is Al Richards. Welcome, Al, to my show.
Welcome. Thank you, Kathy. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Your story is extraordinary. I met you at a business luncheon, and I never knew that you went through such heartache for a while there with your business and those issues. I just never thought somebody was going through that. You were so successful. So tell my audience what you did before all this trauma came into your world.
Well, I spent 24 years in the manufacturing business, really loved my job, had a great time, and that was here in Salt Lake City. And then I spent 3 years in Bowling Green, Kentucky, helping a plant get up and going. And, you know, thought I had the world by the cojones, if I can say that. Mm-hmm. But, things changed. The owner sold the business in 2008, and the corporate world came in, and I was in a pretty bad spot in my life at that time. Anyway, I had a very, very stressful job. I had 43 people that worked underneath me, and literally I spent my weekends partying as well, you know, drinking and doing drugs. And that was kind of like my release on Friday and Saturday, and then I'd get myself clean again and be ready for work Monday. But it's kind of weird, you know, where I don't know if there's very many of your listeners who are spiritual, but I wasn't very spiritual at that time. But I would look in the mirror and on the weekends and just ask God for his help and say, look, if I continue this path, I'm probably not going to be in very good shape if I continue. I had gotten to where I was at about 198 pounds, and being 5'7", 198 pounds shows on you quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But God helped me. I ended up losing my job in 2009, and my whole world turned upside down about that time.
Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened 11 years ago. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, 11 years ago. Yep.
And you lost your job 24 years ago. Is that correct?
It was a job of 24 years. Okay. I lost 11 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Job of 24 years. Wow. And, yeah. But then you had an issue with your, you lost your dad.
Well, what happened is in 2009 was when my world turned upside down. So I lost my job in July of 2009. And then in August, my wife lost her dad of an overdose.
Oh.
And then we were on the verge of losing our house. And it took probably about a year after I lost my job. So sometime in 2010, we lost our house. So we lived off a lot of my retirement, my 401k. And, you know, at the age of 46, everything that you worked hard for is now completely gone. It was a shock. We actually lived in the basement of a friend's houses for the first couple years. But, you know, during that time when I lost my job, I decided I wasn't going to punch a clock for corporate America ever again. And I didn't really know what I was going to do. But I wanted to do some soul searching, because I was at a point in my life where really for 24 years, all I cared about was my job. You know, I missed a lot of my kids' events. I had friends, but I wasn't really like a good friend. If somebody called me and asked for help, I didn't have time. Even if I was doing nothing, I would still tell them I didn't have time. So I really wanted to take that time after I lost my job to figure out who Al Richards was and who I wanted to be, and if I was actually happy with myself, which I knew that I wasn't.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, the 24 years, were you like workaholic, 60 hours a week?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because, yeah, actually I was. Monday through Thursday, I was usually working 14 to 15 hours a day, sometimes 16. And then, of course, Friday, you know, I would punch out right at 3 o'clock just so I could start my partying. But even when I went to Kentucky, I worked 7 days a week for a year and a half straight. So basically, I was putting in well over 80 hours every week.
Wow. How did you do that? I mean,
you know, luckily I was in my mid-30s at the time, so I was in pretty good shape. I was working out 2 hours in the morning before I'd go into work and then work out for a little bit after I got off work. But just dedication and a lot of drive, because there was a lot of people that didn't believe in me when I got transferred over there. They thought I was just basically going to screw things up, but I wanted to prove them wrong. So I worked my butt off to make sure that that didn't happen, that we were successful.
Wow. How did you do? And what were your children and your wife?
My kids were back here in Salt Lake. I was actually going through a divorce at the time. Uh-huh. And the divorce was pretty nasty. And I could see that it was affecting my daughters, because every time their mom and I got around each other, all we did was fight and yell at each other. And, you know, that's not good for the kids. So when I had the opportunity to transfer, I transferred back there. As hard as it was to leave my kids, my two girls, uh-huh. I felt like it was best for them not to be around it. And I will have to say that, thank goodness, where I'm at in my life right now, my ex-wife and I are really good friends. We actually have Thanksgiving dinner together with our daughters and Christmas together with our daughters. So I'm very blessed that we were able to get things worked out and not have that. And I don't like to use this word, but basically not have that hate towards one another.
That's one, not very many people do that these days. That's extraordinary. And tell me about your please forgive me, but is this the wife you have now, or the wife that your first wife that you had the drinking problem?
Well, no, my first wife, she was the mother of my two daughters, but the wife that I have now is the one that has the addiction problem with alcohol.
Oh, that is so hard to deal with, because don't they have mood swings and all kinds of issues that come with that?
Yeah, because they're fighting a lot of demons themselves, you know. Well, I mean, she doesn't like me to use the word demons, so I would have to say the bully that's inside her head. She fights that on a daily basis.
Oh, no. So you're dealing with that now, or you have dealt with it in the past?
No, I've been dealing with it for the past 7 years, and actually the last 4 years has been just... It's been bad. It's not been an easy road.
And you love her so much, you're willing to stick that out. Is that correct?
Yeah. I've had a lot of love for her, and it breaks my heart because I've lost a lot of that love here in the last couple of years because of what we've gone through. But
when she's not drinking, she's probably wonderful to be around.
She's a wonderful lady. She really is. She's a great, great lady. I've been with her coming up on 15 years. She's an awesome individual. The only issue is she doesn't think she's so great, and that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Has she got any form of help, you know, to buoy her up?
Yeah, she's had therapists. Oh my gosh, she's been into 7 or 8 rehabs. It's nobody's been able to get deep inside of her and get this stuff figured out, especially herself. And it's hard for them to get it out when she can't even, you know, get it out herself.
Mm-hmm. And how's it affecting you today? I mean, is it the roller coaster? Talk about that.
Yeah, so I'll turn back the hands of time here a little bit. So about 4 years ago, my wife actually started getting, she was doing well. She got to where she was 13 months sober. Oh. Our relationship was incredible. I mean, we had a good relationship before we got married, but that 13 months was just unbelievable. She got clean. She was happy. It was just a fabulous marriage. And then one day she took a sip of alcohol. I think she figured that she had it beat after 13 months. And that's when her world turned upside down. Shortly after that drink, she ended up getting her first DUI, lost her license. Then about 3 to 4 weeks after that, she decided to drink again, get in her truck and take off. She got pulled over again. So then she got nailed for another DUI plus driving on a suspended license, got thrown in jail for the very first time. And it's just been hell ever since then. She's just gotten worse. And I'm kind of the person that wants to help. I'm, you know, trying to be the knight in shining armor and be there to help my wife. And I argued with one of her therapists one night, I remember, and she's like, "Al, there's nothing you can do." And I'm like, "The hell if I can't, you watch me. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to do it." She's like, "No, there's nothing you can do." It's taken me years to finally realize that she was right. But every day that I walked home, it was like walking into a battlefield, or a minefield. You just walked around very gingerly, because once she was drunk, you had no, all you had to do was say one wrong word and hell broke loose.
Mm-hmm. She may have something in her body that really cannot handle the alcohol.
It's her past. She came from a bad past. She was teased a lot when she was a kid. All her other relationships that she was in, she was with guys that either beat on her or verbally abused her. And she didn't have a good relationship with her dad. She actually found out through one of her therapy sessions that she was probably sexually abused by her father. And she's just a small gal. She's only like 5'2" and weighs 115 pounds. So, you know, you get a pint of alcohol in you and it doesn't take much.
Mm-hmm. And you love her so much and you're willing to see what you can do to help her. And if any of my listeners listening out there, you know, Al can have somebody get in touch with you. Do you want to go through by email?
Yeah, if somebody wanted to reach out to me, my email is alanrichards40@gmail, and that's alanrichards40@gmail.com.
Okay. And just in case there might be somebody out there and say, you know, I've been through this, or, you know, maybe get her a pal or a pen pal that she could talk to. Something to for her to reach out to. And also, too, for you, you know, this is such a burden on you. And does she have any children?
Yeah, she has a son and a daughter, but they're not very helpful. Her whole family's pretty much disowned her, which is really sad. And I'm pretty much all she has. And it's been hard for me, too, because I've had to kick her out, you know, quite a few times. And it scares me when I kick her out, because I'm afraid that, you know, the wrong person's going to cross her path and they're going to grab her. And when she's drunk, they could do anything they wanted to. And she wouldn't have any way of fighting back, because she gets herself so drunk, she can't even stand up.
Mm-hmm. But what's she doing right now? I mean, how's it going right now, this very moment?
Well, right now she's in pretty bad shape, to be honest with you. She had a pretty bad drinking episode about 2 weeks ago. I don't know how many bottles she was putting away, but she's done some damage to her body. She's lost a lot of her motor skills. Mm-hmm. So actually, when I was talking with you earlier, we were just getting to the doctors, because they were getting ready to do some blood work and some tests, and they're going to send her to a neurologist to see if there's been any kind of damage done to her, because she walks like she's only 47 years young, and she walks around like she's in her 80s, and she talks, her talking is very slurred, mm-hmm. almost like she is under the influence of alcohol, but she's not. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and
yeah, so she's done a lot of damage to herself.
she has not been in any car accidents or anything.
No car accidents, thank goodness. We've been very blessed on that part. But yeah, if anybody even wants to reach out who's on the other end, that's one of the reasons why I've been sharing my story, is there are people that are on the other end of the addiction like myself, and we get pretty lost. We get dragged down the same path that the person that has the addiction is on. It got so bad, and I think I shared this with you, but it got so bad about a year and a half ago. I was on my way home from an event, and I'm gonna do my best not to get emotional about this, but I had really just made up my mind I was gonna go home and get my 9mm and go up into the mountains, and I was done, because I couldn't handle going home anymore, and I couldn't handle being around the abuse. And yeah, so I was heading home to get my gun to go commit suicide, and luckily I got a phone call, and I got my act together. And I wish I could remember who called me, because I would thank them. When I got off the phone, I hung up, and we all have screenshots on our phone, and I saw the picture of my two daughters and my three grandkids, and I literally just pulled over to the side of the road and just started bawling. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm thinking about killing myself of something that my wife's going through, and it's taken me down with her. And if I do this, I've just robbed time that my kids and my grandkids have with me. So that's when I started making a change as well. I started changing things, and I got a good friend that works for one of the city's police department, and I called her, and she helps a lot of cops who are battling depression and things, and she really helped me out and told me what my next steps were supposed to be, and that literally saved my life, I believe.
And yeah, because you're forming, I mean, your wife is going through the alcohol syndrome and you're getting depressed. You're forming a a depression there. So have you gone and talked to a counselor or got some therapy, some help there to relieve some of the stress?
No, I didn't. I didn't have insurance because my wife's not worked for years, because she couldn't hold a job. And so a lot of the financial burden is on me. So anything that cost extra money, I got rid of just so I had money to pay my bills. So there's no way I would have been able to afford a therapist. But what really helped me was just talking. And if there's any guys out there that are listening to this program, a lot of us guys, I was raised that guys are supposed to be tough, and we hold our emotions in, and you've got to be that tough guy. But let me tell you right now, that's the worst thing that you can do. By getting out there and talking to people that I trusted, that helped me so much, because I was able to get rid of a lot of those emotions that I had bottled up inside me.
And you're very successful. You always have a smile on your face when I see you at the networking meetings. We're part of a TLC in Salt Lake City, Utah, a networking group. And then I also see you out there on other issues that you're promoting and working with. And I never, ever thought you were going through anything like this. Not one bit. And you have a beautiful smile, and you're out there, and you're outgoing, and oh my gosh, what is it like? Tell my audience, what's it like? Have you gone and sit in with some of the counseling with your wife that that rehab and jail and the detox? Have you gone and sit with her on any of the counseling on that of those issues?
Yeah, most of the time when she was in a rehab center, after a certain amount of time, the therapist would always ask if I would be willing to come in and sit down. I always did every single time I went in. When she got out, I would go to AA meetings with her. I'd be right there by her side. I mean, basically, I took her to all her AA meetings. There was a few times when she had a sponsor where they would just go together so they could have their time together and not me around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was there for quite a bit. That's one thing that hurts is, you know, with all the love and support that I gave her, it still wasn't enough to get her to stop, which is very tough when you care for somebody and you're trying to be their knight in shining armor, and doesn't matter what you do, it doesn't help.
Can I ask a question? Do you feel that AA really works?
Yeah, I do believe AA works. It's helped thousands, if not millions, of people since it's gone. But as I've started learning more about addiction, one of the things that I don't like, you know, so you may even see on TV or programs where somebody gets up and they're like, "Hi, my name is so-and-so and I'm an alcoholic or I'm an addict." And I'm sure you already know this, Kathy, but two of the most powerful words that a human can speak is "I am." And when you get up and say, "I am an alcoholic," you're labeling yourself, which you already feel bad about yourself. That's what I've learned anyway from most of the alcoholics and addicts that I've spoke with. Mm-hmm. And then you're getting up and you're basically saying, "I am this." So you're putting a label on yourself. And that is one thing that I don't agree with AA with them saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they want them to admit that they have this issue. And really, yeah, you can admit privately, but you don't need to admit it publicly, you know, through, you know, your counseling. But, you know, the main thing I'd rather hear is, "I'm overcoming my issue. I'm doing better. This is what I'm doing. This is what it's helping me," you know? And then somebody looks at it like, "Oh, I want to give that a try." Or I want to be, you know, overcome my problem this way. So that's, you know, what are they doing to really help them get over the alcohol? You know, what are they doing to get over this issue?
Well, they usually just read from the big book is what they call it. It's kind of like the addict's Bible. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they have the support. So it's basically people who have gone through it. Because my wife told me once a couple years ago, I was doing my best to give her advice. And she turned to me and she goes, Can I say something to you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, shoot." And she goes, "I would much rather have you be my husband than trying to be my therapist, because you have no clue what I'm going through." And she was right. She was 100% right. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're not the addict, we all think that it's very simple. It's just like, don't drink or don't use. It's a piece of cake. Well, it's a piece of cake for somebody that doesn't have the addictive personality, but for somebody that does, it's not a piece of cake, you know, and it just doesn't have to do with alcohol or drugs. It could be eating, it could be porn, it could be, you know, I mean, it could be anything. Mm-hmm. Everybody has an addiction. I have an addiction with ice cream. I love ice cream. I used to sit down and have a big bowl of it every single night, and I finally realized, well, this is probably not good for me, because, you know, I stay in shape, I work out, but, you know, that was my addiction. So it's something that's not that easy. One of my wife's friends said, "Well, it's all about a choice." And maybe it is a choice. I don't know. It's hard to say, because it's not like you wake up one day and go, "You know what? I think I'm going to be an addict. You know what? I think I'm going to be an alcoholic." You know, I mean, people that fight depression is fighting the same kind of battles that somebody that fights an addiction or somebody that has anxiety, you know. But another thing I have a problem with, society accepts that, you know, if you fight depression or anxiety, you go to a doctor, they give you a prescription, you take pills to help you get through the day, and people accept it. But if you're a drug addict or an alcoholic, society basically looks at you like you're a loser, like you're worthless. And there's really not any type of medication that can just get you to stop, you know? Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you a quick story before we go into a commercial break?
Absolutely.
My father had a smoking problem, okay? I never forget this. He was on chemo or something, oxygen, not chemo, but oxygen for his breathing issue. And I said, Dad, I said, I don't understand. You're on this oxygen machine and all this other stuff, taking medication, help your, you know, the situation you have. But yet you're still smoking. And because that's the problem. That's what's causing all these issues. And he turned to me, and I'll never forget it. He said, Kathy, I've tried everything. Patches. I tried gum. I tried to stop. I tried some type of therapy thing, meditation or something. He goes, I tried everything, and I just cannot get this to stop. And I'll never forget that. And I knew he was talking from his heart. You know when someone's telling the truth and they're just doing everything they can to stop. But forgive me, anyone out there, you know, I believe in a higher power. And I turned it. I remember I came home. My father lived in New Jersey. My mother and father, they're still together. And I said to, I came home in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I just turned it over to a higher power. And that higher power took care of it for me. And my father finally stopped. But it took a certain situation, I hate to say it, it took a heart attack 2 weeks later. And that heart attack got him to stop.
Yeah.
And I knew what to do. I had the authority to do it as a child, and I took it to a higher power. But that's just my belief in my situation. And with the love of my father, I took it to a higher power. But anyway, but make the long story short, we're going to hear more of what we can do to help your wife and get the help that she needs. And we will be right back. We're going to go into a commercial break. How's that sound?
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Drusilla. I am the founder and owner of Drusilla's Closet. I've created a unique system to organize your pantry and kitchen. The system also works great in various parts of your home and garage. Also in my closet, I have unique furniture, art, and decor. You can find us on Facebook, Drusilla's Closet, or call at 435-224-9266.
Hey, this is Rocktop Construction. Rocktop is a family-owned business based out of Utah. We specialize in replacing worn or storm-damaged roofs and understand how to assist homeowners with property claims. For reliable service and the best value on a quality and energy-efficient roof, call Rocktop Construction at 801-567-1234. We have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. Again, that's 801-567-1234 to find out more about how we can protect your home.
Hidden Home Horse Rescue Foundation. We are a 501c3 nonprofit that rescues both wild and domestic horses and other equine that are either unwanted, neglected, abused, or their humans move. Hidden Home helps rehabilitate them to be used in equine therapy to help those in need. We could use your support. You can contact us at 801-910-2698.
I'm sitting here with Al Richards. Al, I just wanted to let you know that my story that I was telling you about with my father lived a year and a half later after his attack, heart attack. So some people, it just takes a little kick in the butt, but hopefully we can find ways to help your wife and also to help you. Because I find that you're going through some issues there as well.
Yeah, you know, and I'm glad you shared your story, Kathy. So thank you for doing that. Because, you know, even in AA, they talk about whether you believe in God or not, believe into a higher power. And mm-hmm. and I do believe very highly of whether you're a spiritual person or not. But there's definitely a higher power out there. And that's what's helped me get through a lot of this stuff that I've been going through. You know, you asked me even earlier about, every time you saw me, I had a smile on my face. And, you know, a lot of people had no clue what I was going through. And it was a roller coaster ride because I didn't want people to know what I was going through. And everybody that knows me knows I'm pretty upbeat and smiling, and I love hugging people and meeting people. But yeah, I mean, it was my higher power that has helped given me the strength to get me through this. And, you know, where you said it, your dad had to have the heart attack to get him to stop. This last time with my wife, the damage that it's done to her, she knows she's not right. Almost on a daily basis, I'll catch her crying and I'll check on her and see if she's okay. And she goes, I did something to myself this time. And I'm like, yeah, you did. And it has really scared her. And a lot of people at AA meetings, when they get up and share their story, the ones who have been sober for a year or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, whatever it may be, they all said for them, they finally had to hit rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And I think she realized that she has definitely hit rock bottom, you know, with her health and even our relationship, it's not the same. You know, we are working on a divorce, which is sad to say, and she wants me to give her one more chance, but I've heard give me one more chance for the last 4 years, I don't know how many times, but I'm still there for her because I'm all she has. You know, I'm just not going to toss her out on the street, and because she can't do this alone, she's got to have somebody. But she is actually getting really close. And, you know, I don't know how many people, you and I are the same religion, Kathy, but I actually called my uncle up last Friday and we went over there and he actually gave her a blessing, which I believe will help.
That's good. That's good that she's getting some help. But what are you doing in the meantime? You mentioned the last time I saw you're a public speaker and you tell the story to others and it's probably a little bit lower base than what you're telling me. I don't know. So tell me about that. Tell me about your public speaking engagements.
Well, you know, when God put us all on this earth, every single one of us have a talent and every one of us have something that we are supposed to do while we're here. And as painful as it has been dealing with my wife's stuff, because in the last 11 years, I've been actually trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I've done all kinds of different things and they've not really worked out. But about a year ago, I was sitting down with a friend at a coffee shop and sharing my story. And he's like, you need to tell your story. You need to get out there. You need to be a speaker. And I'm like, well, who the heck would want to hear my story? And he goes like, well, who wouldn't? Because there's other people that are going through the same thing that you're going through. So I actually thought about it and I'm like, you know, my wife, before she got really bad with the alcoholism, she actually said that I've got a way of interacting with people and connecting with people. And she thought I should do something like that. So I believe the many times that I've knelt down and asked God why I'm going through this, I believe now this is why I'm going through it, is so I can get out there and hopefully help others that are in the same situation that I've been. Because luckily I didn't follow through with my suicide, but there are other people that may. And by sharing my story, if I can help save even just one person, it's worth it.
You know, the suicide, and also too with the COVID-19 that we're going through in 2020 is not helped either. There's been people who tried to commit suicide because of loss of job, loss of the income, loss of their home. You know, the list goes on and on and on, and they don't know how to handle it, you know. And they may turn to alcohol or drugs to relieve the stress, but then they realize it's adding more to their plate. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, suicides have gone up. I had a one-on-one with a good buddy of mine just a couple of weeks ago, He is actually a silver medalist in the 2002 Winter Olympics through the bobsled. And we hadn't talked for a while, and we sat down, and he said that about 6-7 months ago, he literally tried to commit suicide. And now that's pretty much his mission as well, is luckily he didn't succeed, thank goodness. And now he's wanting to get out there and help others.
Mm-hmm. So he was in the 2002 Winter Olympics?
Yeah, 2002 Winter Olympics. He was a silver medalist. His story is a fascinating story. He grew up here in Salt Lake as well, and came from a broken family. And when I first met him, he told the story of him being sandwiched on a motorcycle between his mom and his mom's boyfriend as they were going down a neighborhood in Salt Lake City doing a drive-by shooting. And he was 9 years old at the time when that was happening. And, you know, he grew up with his mom doing drugs. And actually, when he went to the Olympics, his mom was at the state prison. So it was a pretty big story during the Olympics when the bobsledding came about. The news was all over it telling his story. But, you know, even after that, you know, you think the guy was successful, went to the Olympics, and he's got all this. But it's not really the case. He started having issues and getting down on himself and tried to commit suicide.
That is so, what a sad story. I never even imagined. I have a good friend too, who's an athlete, very well known name. I can't mention it yet, but has issues with depression, and people don't, and I just thought that was the worst of the worst. But what you're telling me is like, whoa. So there's more to the issue than that's really out there. Wow. And I know depression causes a lot of things too, like suicide, drugs, you know, but thank goodness my friend's not on that I know of. And, but yeah, he finally, you know, is why I put a foot down and said, you're getting help. And he finally did, and found out there was issues with his childhood that brought all this other stuff up. And I'm like, what? You know, so there's hidden things that cause all this stuff. And hate to say it, it happens to be the childhood life that, you know, and I think it's hard for someone to drop if they've been so severely hurt by a parent. Yeah. Because a child looks up at their parents. That's the first thing they see, the first trust, the first love, first of everything. And if you step on that and smash it, it breaks them with the reality of the world we live in. Oh
yeah,
it's so sad.
Do you know who Eckhart Tolle is?
Not right off, no.
So Eckhart Tolle is a pretty well-known author. He wrote the books The Power of Now and The New Earth. His story is pretty phenomenal as well. But in one of his books, I believe it's The Power of Now, there was a statement in the book that said, every addiction stems from an unconscious refusal to face and move through your own pain. And the word unconscious, a lot of times people don't have a clue what that is that they're dealing with. They just know that there's something dark inside of them. And the only way to numb that is using a substance or committing suicide. So it's, yeah, sometimes you got to dig down deep and get it figured out. But for the listeners out there, you know, society likes to make fun of people and shame people. And I believe that's one of the biggest reasons why suicide rate is going up. Mm-hmm. Is because people are afraid to talk about it. And you need to talk about it, because getting it off your chest will help so much. I mean, it's not going to fix it like overnight, but it will help.
Mm-hmm. Al, how do you feel about, I mean, the teenage suicide is really high too, and the bullying, because I think it has to do with the phones and text messages that we have today. And even text message, somebody can, even adult, can really hurt someone. And we don't know they're going through depression. We don't know what they're going through. And if somebody sends something and they get the wrong message, oh, that's so sad. especially with the children. What would you say to someone that is a teenager and is going through that, going through addiction?
Matt, I would say reach out to somebody ASAP, somebody that you trust. You definitely got to reach out to somebody that you can trust that's not going to share, you know. And I think that's a problem where some people tell things to somebody and then they turn around and that somebody tells somebody and the message always gets mixed. But I would say if you cannot talk to your parents, you know, and if you don't have a close friend, go to your counselor. If you're still in school, ask them for help. Don't be ashamed. That's the biggest thing. Do not be ashamed of whatever it is that you're going through, because if you're ashamed, you're going to hang on to that stuff. And just you gotta get help. Don't be ashamed for going and talking to somebody and saying, hey, I've got this issue going on and I need help. We all need help. You know, Kathy, you've been around sports, professional sports, and I know you know professional athletes. Uh-huh. And, you know, if somebody is good enough to be a pitcher in baseball or a quarterback in football, even once they make it to the big leagues, they still have coaches that work with them them better, right?
Yep. Yes, they do. Yes.
We all need that. We all need a mentor. We all need a coach, you know, whether even if it's not professional, but somebody that you trust and somebody that you believe in that's going to lead you in the right direction. But yeah, don't have the fear of going to somebody, and don't ever be ashamed. I mean, I'm 57 years young. I don't like to say old, but I'm 57 years young. And when I did my very second talk, I did it at a luncheon at a restaurant, sharing my story. And there was only about 15, 20 people at this event, mm-hmm. but I broke down. I started crying, you know, and I wasn't ashamed of doing it. You know, even though I'm a man and I'm a manly man and get up there and say what I need to say, but I don't have a problem sharing my emotions, because that is what has helped me get through a lot of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard through counselors have mentioned cry. It's okay to cry and let those emotions out when you talk about your issue that you're going through, addiction or child abuse or anything, that it helps release and it also makes you stronger. And you can overcome those things, and then you can talk about it. But yet, you don't have to show emotions, but you can still talk about it and then express how to overcome that. I can see you being a good speaker on these type of issues, especially the high schools. High schools need people, you know. They always go for the athletes, but still, what about the normal person who goes to work every day? You know, the ones who's dealing with the issue at home right now. Or the person who, you know, that's what they should bring into the school to get them to stop and sit there and think, oh, yeah, I can.
Yeah, my very first talk was at Copper Hills High School here in West Jordan, and I did a talk for a military class. So that was very interesting, because we just didn't talk about addiction. We talked about everything, you know, politics, sexuality, you know, I mean, troubles at home, troubles with friends, you know, the drama that goes on in your life as a teenager sometimes. So that one was a tough talk for me on my very first one, but it went over very well. I was very happy because I had a lot of the kids come up and say thank you. So apparently I reached them in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. There's something that's missing in the home. And I would say this because I grew up, you know, I'm a little older than you, but I grew up with a time where we had to say thank you and we appreciate what we do for each other. And we started off with our parents and our grandparents. And that really helped, because when my brother or my sister tells me, thank you for helping me with my homework, then you're like, oh yeah, you know, you feel good. You forget you did something, even though it's at home. Because remember, everything starts at home. And I'm not saying I come from the Brady Bunch family. I mean, there were still issues there, you know. But the thing is we learn to appreciate. And I also grew up too, very strict home, too, where I couldn't leave the table at dinner time unless I had permission to do so. Does that make sense? So, but on the other hand, I respect it. You know, I respect my parents' discipline because it made me who I am today. But I also remember learning to appreciate and say thank you. And then we start with our companions too. Say thank you. Thank you for taking the time to help me. And thank you for, you know, let me talk to you or listen. And then the person feels good. It's like a boost of a shot of happiness. It really does. It feels good. So when someone says, thank you for helping me or helping me, doesn't it make you feel good? Doesn't it just bring some joy in your soul?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, I've got three grandkids. I got two granddaughters and a grandson, and they're 9, 6, and 4. And during the summer, they're playing sports. I always go to their soccer games on Saturday. And I tell you what, I've been doing this for 3 years, going to soccer games. And at the end of the game, they always come up and give me a big bear hug and say, Papa, thank you for coming and watching me play. That literally puts tears in my eyes every single time.
And think what you're doing for them, because I remember I was an athlete in a lot of sports and stuff, and I remember my grandparents being there. Oh, and I still remember them today. You know, it's like I'm so thankful they showed up. It was tickled. Yeah. It makes your day. And just think what you're doing for them, and it will help them so they don't become, you know, hopefully not an alcohol or get some form of hard addictions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, but anyway, maybe hopefully somebody out there is listening to this podcast and it can be able to reach out to you. One more time, give out your I'm going to post it on your profile after we're done too, but you know, your email, give that out one more time.
Okay, so the email is AllenRichards40, and that's AllenRichards40 @gmail.
Mm-hmm. gmail.com. Okay.
Yeah, gmail.com, and you can find me on Facebook under Al Richards mm-hmm. as well. I have a lot of people reach out to me on Messenger and ask me questions and things. So,
But I admire you for hanging in there with your wife, because dealing with alcohol or alcohol addiction is so hard. It is so hard to go through. And I admire you for it. And I know you're thinking about getting divorced, but I'm sitting there thinking to myself, don't do it yet. Because I think she needs you. And I think that, and you need her. Because you're learning from this too. I think that she's realizing, oh my gosh, what did I got myself into? And if you walk away, you know, divorce her, it's going to crush. It's going to crush even more. You know what I mean? But yeah. I know you need your happiness, but I'm sure she's a beautiful woman. And I'm sure she's, you know, got some amazing talents of herself. So she needs to recognize her own talents. You know, we got to find those for her and help her overcome this. And I'm sure in the long run, it's going to be worth it all the way around in the long run. And her children. Now, I think I said this earlier. Do they come around and see her? Do they?
No, nothing. Like I said, she's tried to reach out to her daughter. Her and her daughter don't have that good of a relationship. They have that love-hate relationship. When they're far away from each other, they're very good. But you get them close together for a couple hours, then they're like cats and dogs. They just do not get along. But they get along when they're away from each other, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And her son is just basically kind of just doesn't want anything to do with her ever since she's been having her issue. And it's the same with the rest of the family.
And so she, where is she at right now?
She is actually, I had brought her back underneath my roof last Tuesday, I think it was, picked her up off of a street corner and brought her back underneath my roof. She was in pretty bad shape. She had nowhere to go. So basically she was homeless. So I told her as long as she wasn't drinking, then I would be there to help her. And that's what I've been doing. I've still been by her side and helping her. And like I said, today I was taking her to doctor's appointments to see if they can figure out what's going on with her. But
what about her rehab? Is she going into any form of rehab?
No, she just left rehab. I would say the last rehab she was in was about a month ago.
Is she doing anything after the rehab, like going, like continuing therapy or anything like that?
Well, she's supposed to, but she doesn't, because, I mean, within 24 hours after she gets out of rehab, she's going to the liquor store and shoplifting alcohol and getting herself drunk.
Oh, my word. So really, rehab is not even working.
No. She's been through, like I said, 7 or 8 of them, and none of them. She just wasn't ready. She has, you know, she can blow through rehab. She's been in rehab as long as 6 months.
Oh, really?
You know, she wants credit, because at one time last year she went 8 months sober, but 6 months of that she was in rehab, you know, and then she did stay sober for 2 months after she got out, but then she started drinking again. And each time she tries to clean up and then hits the bottle again, it gets worse and worse. She just starts drinking more and more.
Does she really like the taste of alcohol?
You know, she was always the type of girl, like a lot of girls out there, like, you know, the sweet drinks, the, as we used to call them back in my days, the foo-foo drinks, you know, like with the umbrellas in it and things like that. But as the alcohol addiction got worse, she just, she'll drink. She doesn't, it doesn't matter what it is. I've caught her drinking mouthwash. I've caught her drinking cooking wine. Anything that has alcohol in it, she'll drink it, whether it tastes good or not.
She's addicted. It's something in her bloodstream. Because I asked a friend of mine, he was a doctor at the time, and I said to him, I said, okay, my brother, forgive me, my brother has an alcohol problem. But he drinks the same amount as my sister does. But my sister does not have an alcohol problem. So I asked him about that, and he said it's in the bloodstream. It's in the blood. It's addiction. It's what you're born with. And some people can handle it, and some people cannot at all. So it's in her, it's addiction. It's like, for example, like you like ice cream.
Yeah.
You gotta have it.
I blame that on my grandpa.
Or someone who likes chocolate, you know. I gotta have chocolate. So, but anyway, so it's something that she really has to work on. But I think we need to find her another habit. Do you know what I mean? Maybe going to the gym, something, crochet, something that she's gotta have a habit. So create another habit so that she can get rid of this alcohol.
Well, she wants to work with Down syndrome kids. I'm co-chair for Best Buddies Utah. Best Buddies has been around since 1981, and we work a lot with Down syndrome, autistic kids, any kind of handicap, really. But she gets all gung-ho because I think she would be great at it. She just loves the kids, but she just hasn't gotten herself away from the alcohol long enough to get in there. And I would actually like to see her sober up so her and I can team up together, because I think we would be a powerhouse duel where we could get on stage and she could share her side of the story and I could share my side of the story.
Yeah.
And if we could help people.
If she can get better, if we can find a way to get her help, motivate her, that she can talk about her story and talk about, you know, what it's like. Because I don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like. Only she does. what it's like going through it inside her body, inside her mind. You know, what is it like to have a craving of alcohol? I have no clue what that's like. You don't have no clue. You know what I mean? What is that like to, you know what I mean? I mean, I guess it's like Diet Coke or Mountain Dew. And people love Mountain Dew and they can't. They got to have it. They have to have it. And, you know, maybe it's something like that. I have no clue. You know, where you have to have, you know, maybe the only person can tell us is her. And and tell us too about, you know, the depression, a little bit of PTSD according to your wife's therapy. You know, is it you suffering that or is it her?
No, it was actually me. You know, like I said earlier in the show, I just couldn't handle coming home to the battlefield every single day. But she had just gotten out of rehab and she got into a program. It's a rehab place called the Phoenix here in Utah. I think they're actually all over the United States. But it got to the point where the therapist started to invite me to the meetings. A lot of times it'll take a month or two before they allow a spouse or a family member to come in. And she actually interviewed me without my wife being there and started asking me a bunch of questions. And at the end of the evening, after we both was there with the therapist, she says, "You actually have a little bit of form of PTSD." And I'm like, "PTSD? I thought that was only for like first responders or somebody that has served in our military and has gone through war and seen all kinds of crazy things." And she goes, "No, you know, any kind of drama, that's strong drama that's going on, it, you can get PTSD. And as I started thinking about it, I realized that I'm a pretty high energetic guy. You know, I get up, I go to the gym early in the morning, I work out for a couple hours, I go hiking during the summer, you know, and as you know, I do a lot of networking. And by 5 o'clock in the evening, I was just completely drained and shot. And then when you're going into a networking group, a lot of the people that know me, I always walk in with a smile. I'm high energetic. Well, a lot of that, I was hiding what was going on in my personal life. And as soon as I would leave, I would be completely drained and exhausted. And I couldn't figure out why I was being this way. I was actually thinking about going to a doctor to say, "Hey, am I coming down with diabetes or something? Because I just don't feel right." But it was just because of the emotional roller coaster I was going through with my wife that was causing it. And once she helped point that out, I mean, it did help me a little bit, but until I got completely away from the situation, that's when my life actually started changing and I started getting my energy back.
And what about the PTSD? So that's what you did to get it back. But still, running from something doesn't really cure it. So what do you do to cure it besides going to the gym, which is very good for you, by the way? And do you do any form of reading? Do you do any form of mind settings? What do you do?
Yeah, so actually, that's a great question, Kathy. Yeah, I do. Besides going to the gym and hiking and getting active, so every morning I get up, and I've been doing this for quite a few years, I post 3 positive affirmations on my Facebook page, my Instagram page, and sometimes on my LinkedIn page. And a lot of that are feelings that I'm going through, but also it's to help others. I do nothing but read positive, kind of like self-help books. Mm-hmm. I read a ton of self-help books. And I've never really been a church-going person. And then when I did lose my job, like I said, about 11 years ago, that's the first time I actually hit my knees in I don't know how many years, probably since I was a teenager. And that is one thing that's helped me. So, you know, again, for those, if you don't believe in God and you only want to believe in a higher power, whatever it may be, believe in something. But that has really helped me. And then I've done hypnosis. I've got a good friend that does that, and she's done that for me a couple times. And yeah, just the reading, positive thinking, and getting the message out there, that has just, it has helped me tremendously instead of keeping it all bottled up. The workout helps a lot as well, because I can let go of a lot of that anger and frustration with weights and hiking. Mm-hmm. But to be able to meditate a little bit, even if it's for 5 minutes.
I was going to ask you about that. Do you do any form of meditation? Because I've heard, you know, that is amazing. I've been to India. I don't know if you've ever been there. But they, you know, really strongly believe in a lot of meditation and stuff. And there's some good and then there's some bad. But, you know, pick the good, you know, use your common sense. But get into some meditation that helps. That releases a lot of stress, too.
Yeah.
And it will help you put in a better mood when your wife's going through that. So you can know how to channel that out so you don't suck all that that negative that she's throwing out, because you got to learn to shake it. And you know what I mean, she could be going through her or anybody out there, you know, and that person screaming or hollering or whatever they're doing, you just know how to put your mind into a different form setting.
Yeah, you know, there's an exercise if I could share really quick. So about 6 years ago, I had a friend invite me to this class during the evening time, and I'm like, all right, what the heck, I'll go try it out. And when I first got there, I'm thinking, oh man, this is really lame, this sucks, why did I agree to come here? But as the class went on, they basically were teaching you how quick you can change how you're feeling. And an exercise that I still use to this day, but she had everybody stand up and we all got in this circle. And she says, I want everybody to draw an imaginary circle right in front of you. So people looked down and they were, you know, imagining there was a circle in front of them. And then she says, at the count of three, I'm going to ask you to step in that circle. And I want you to think of something that gets you really upset, whether it's something a spouse said or your kids did, or somebody did something to you or said something to you or it happened at work, whatever it may be, but think of something that really gets you upset. So she counted to three, everybody, and we all closed our eyes and we stepped into the circle. And I think we were there in our circle for maybe 60 seconds, maybe 90 seconds. And she goes, okay, I want everybody to open their eyes and look around the room. So you opened up your eyes and you looked around the room and you could see people with their fists clenched. You could see people that were, you know, they were gritting their teeth. You can see people with angry looks on their face. You could see people crying. You could just read the room that there was so much negative in that during that time. And then she had everybody step outside the circle and she goes, okay, this time we're going to change it up. She goes, at the count of three, I want you to step back into that circle. And I want you to think of something that just makes you happy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter whether it's looking at flowers or drawing or reading a book or being outside or playing with your kids or grandkids. But she says, think of something that makes you very happy. And so she counted to three. We all closed our eyes, stepped inside our circle again after 60, 90 seconds. She had us open our eyes and look around the room, and everybody in that room had a smile on their face.
Wow.
And then once she had us all sit down, she goes, does anybody understand what this exercise was all about? And I believe somebody stepped up and said, yeah, I cannot believe how quickly I could change my emotions from anger to being so happy. Mm-hmm. And it's literally just like that. You know, we get frustrated at work. We get frustrated with a spouse or our kids. And we seem to carry that through the rest of our day.
Right, right.
When we're choosing to be angry. Who likes to be angry? I know I don't. I don't like the feeling I feel when I'm angry or when I'm sad. And I don't have to step into a circle. I mean, I've got the picture of my daughters and my grandkids on my phone. And if I'm starting to feel down or upset or angry, All I do is turn on my phone and look at that picture, and I'm thinking, you know what? I am so blessed, and I am so grateful. Life really isn't all that bad, and it really helps me go through and get through whatever it is that's making me angry. Uh-huh. Plus, I've learned to listen to my own head. So when those negative thoughts are coming through, I've learned to finally recognize them. It's taken me a lot of years to do it, but it's something that I've continued to work on. So it doesn't bring me down. So I can walk around with a smile on my face every day, because life is going to throw challenges at us no matter what. That's part of growing. If we don't have troubled times and down times, or, you know, sad times or angry times, that's what helps us grow as individuals. We just need to learn how we can channel that to where we can control it.
I also want to ask you, Al, because we need to close. I want to know, what are you doing now? I mean, you seem to be successful. You're doing commercials, I notice, and you're doing public speaking, and I think you do some coaching too. Is that correct?
No, I really don't do any kind of coaching. I did in the past a little bit, but so I manage a concrete business. I manage my brother's concrete business. I'm working on the public speaking, and I work for Stars Talent Agency here in Salt Lake, where I do commercials. I do stand-in in some movies. I was in a Hallmark Christmas movie. I've been on The Chosen. I've been on the taping of the second series of The Chosen, the story about Christ. Yeah, I just actually did last week a MyPillow commercial. And then also I'm working with a gentleman here in Salt Lake where we are working on a platform where we can actually help small businesses, because a lot of small businesses have been hurt from this COVID-19. And we have come up with a way where we can help get them marketed and help bring customers into their business, whether it's a service or retail or whatever it may be. So we're getting ready to launch that in February. So
wonderful.
Those are the four things I'm working on. I'm doing all of it at once.
Well, don't overwhelm yourself. But no, it sounds like fun, because commercials are fun. And then doing, you know, side movies and things like that. And, you know, they film Yellowstone here too, the movie.
Yes.
Yellowstone up in Park City. And I've been in that studio, but I can tell you about that later. And I met Kevin Costner. Yeah, it's Kevin Costner, the director. But yeah, and I didn't even know I was talking to him.
Oh, geez.
He looked familiar.
My agent was wanting me to get on Yellowstone as well, but they have now moved it to where they're not doing it here in Park City and Camas anymore. They actually did move it to Montana.
Oh, well, that's new. That's whole new news.
Yeah, because I was pretty bummed. I did a whole photo shoot in the cowboy outfit because she was going to try to get me on that, and I was pretty excited because I would have loved to been on set with Kevin Costner.
Yeah, well, I went. It was quite a while ago, about maybe 10 months ago, and somebody wanted me to check out that studio, so I went out there on their behalf, and I was waiting to get a tour, and I walked on to the side of the set, and I thought, wow, because apparently he was using three studios, and. This guy comes up, stands right next to me, had a toothpick in his mouth. We're just talking the breeze. And I looked over at him, and I thought, he looks familiar. And then I thought, no, I couldn't be. And then all of a sudden, the guy, my guide for the studio, had a big grin on his face. And I thought, well, I better go see what he's all up, what he's about. And then he told me he was standing right next to Kevin Costner. And I'm like,
wow.
Really? We're just shooting the breeze. But anyway, I always run into celebrities. Sometimes I don't even recognize. They look familiar. You know, there's that thoughts going through my mind. But anyway, make the long story short, I just want to thank you so much, Alan, for coming on my show and telling me your story, you know, your life story of what you've been going through, which I've never would known in a million years. Because you're always so uplift and positive and always willing to help somebody. I noticed that too about you. And but I would like to have you come back and talk about your business deal that you're doing to help out with small businesses and any public speaking engagements that you're doing, and keep me informed. Would you do that?
I will.
Okay, and especially for my listeners, there's quite a few people that love you and love your story, and hopefully, you know, can help somebody. And don't be afraid.
I hope so.
And also to everybody who's listening in, I will have his email, you know, on the profile. You know, give me at least half hour and it'll be up. And if you want to continue talking with him, I know you would love to. I know you answer people back. So.
Yes, definitely.
Just mention.
And thank you, Kathy, for allowing me to be on your show. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And you enjoy this beautiful day and the holiday season and everything. And don't give up on your wife. Just don't give up yet. She needs
you. I won't give up on her. I definitely won't do that. I mean, I haven't given up on her in the 7 years, especially the last 4 years. So I'll still be there to give her support.
You're a great guy. So, but anyway, but thank you so much for tuning in. And until then, everyone have a great evening. This is the Kathy Lee Parker Show.